Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is produced in association with Jazz Times. Steinway artist Richard Dowling has traveled the world playing Chopin, Beethoven, and much of the repertoire one would expect from a top classical pianist. And although he fell in love with ragtime as a child, he didn't make it a focus of his performances until the last few years, when, against the judgment of his agent and just about everyone else, he decided to record and perform the complete works of Scott Joplin. Now, with multiple sold-out concerts across the country, including Carnegie Hall, where he did Joplin's 53 works in afternoon and evening sessions, and a highly acclaimed double CD, Richard has more than proved his point. I talked to him about this tour de force and the continuing appeal of this classic style of music. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Many people, myself included, came to ragtime by learning Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag, Joplin's best-known work. Here is a less traditional version of that classic, played by the self-proclaimed inventor of jazz, New Orleans pianist-composer Jelly Roll Morton. Think the enduring appeal is of ragtime? Because it is. You've proven it. It's fantastic. I mean, I love it. And you have this happen all the time, I'm sure, at your concerts. I'm constantly having people come up to me and say that they learned Maple Leaf Rag when they were a kid, or they tried. And you did. I did. We both learned it when we were 10. It's fascinating to me that it still has this kind of appeal. So what do you think it is that makes people still love this music?
Ragtime just embodies happiness. As I often say at concerts of ragtime, You can't listen to this music and stay in a bad mood. It's really the antidote to the blues. And I don't mean the blues, musical blues.
I mean the emotional blues.
I don't know what it is about the syncopation, but it puts a smile on your face every single time.
Mm.
And not just as a listener, as a performer too. If you're the one, whether you're professional or an amateur, and you're just trying to play ragtime, the hours whiz by and you feel better after you get up from the piano.
It's true. It's fun to play. One of the things that I've thought about a lot is how ragtime has been a great path for classical musicians to either go into jazz or stick with ragtime, but to do something different than the typical repertoire, because I've had a lot of classical musicians tell me that. I mean, look what it's done for you.
Sure.
It's a life-changing event.
Exactly. But the thing about Scott Joplin is he's been in kind of in purgatory for a while, as has ragtime, because, you know, with classical musicians, if you ask them, who's the greatest classical composer, they'll all say Johann Sebastian Bach. And you say, oh, yeah, well, of course. Well, do you play Bach on your recitals? Oh, no. Well, why not? Well, it's kind of old-fashioned, and audiences don't really like Bach's music. It doesn't really work in a modern recital format. So, of course, Bach gets relegated to just the specialists. Same thing in the jazz world. You ask jazzers, you know, what's the beginning of jazz? Oh, well, that's the great genius composer Scott Joplin. Ragtime's the beginning. Well, great. I'm glad you agree. Do you play Scott Joplin on your programs? Oh, no. Well, why not? Kind of old-fashioned. Audiences don't really want to listen to that. I said, so, you know, he's stuck in this crack, as our other ragtime composers, in that the classical music world doesn't want them and the jazz world doesn't want them. So it's a nice niche to be in because so few people are playing this music. And when I say this music, it encompasses actually a large number of styles. I mean, you're a stride player.
Mm-hmm.
It's not far from ragtime.
Mm.
You know, they're intimately connected. How many people in the jazz world today play stride? Still very few.
Right.
You know, so right. You know, we're sort of in the same boat here.
Mm.
But the thing is it's a virtuosity too. It requires a pretty enormous amount of technique to make it sound right, to make it sound good. We know who the players were. They all had huge hands.
Right.
And we do our best to roll our tenths.
Right, right.
But you've got to be able to get around the keyboard. You have to have an extraordinary amount of technique, unlike a lot of other genres of music today, where it's, you know, electronically produced.
Right, and it's hard to jump in and just play a little bit. You have to have that left hand technique together. And I'm fascinated with the transition that you've gone through, because I had you on the show about 11 years ago, we figured, and you were putting ragtime into your concerts, into your classical concerts, sort of sneaking it in because you loved it and you got a good response. But there has been this journey for you that I find fascinating to playing the complete works of Scott Joplin, which I find staggering because I've played a lot of that music. But it's a real commitment to not only learn all of it, but to record all of it, to perform all of it. So talk about that and how that all came about.
It was 2007. I met Sue Keller, who is a wonderful ragtime, blues, jazz pianist who now lives in Cape Cod. And at the time, Sue was the artistic director of the Scott Joplin International Ragtime Festival in Sedalia, Missouri. And she heard me play a concert, and she came up to me afterward, and she said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Who are you?" And she said, "I'm Sue Keller. I'm the director of the Joplin Festival, and you're coming next year." This was the end of 2006, and I said, okay, there's a Scott Joplin Festival? And she said, "What kind of rock have you been living under?" And it's true. I mean, I had been in the classical world. I didn't know that for over 20 years at that point, there had been a Scott Joplin Festival.
And for our audience, I want to say there are these ragtime festivals that, and some traditional jazz, meaning sort of Dixieland and that sort of thing, that exist, but you and I make our living in performing arts centers.
Right.
And people that are doing what we're doing are very often not in those festivals because these are not highly paid festivals.
They're
small. There are a lot of lovely people who play well that do this as either a hobby or something like that, correct?
Correct.
So there's a reason you wouldn't know about this festival necessarily.
Right. So I went at her invitation. It was exactly as you described. But it really changed my life because in the classical world, you know, can be very competitive.
Mm.
And also the music is considered sacrosanct.
Mm.
In the ragtime world and early jazz, even though there's a tradition, the tradition encompasses improvisation. And so it's a different approach to the music making. It's much more open. You can come and play in your style. You don't have to stick to the notes on the page. Now, I had always improvised a little bit, but two things that why this has changed my life. Number one is, and most importantly, is this world at festivals I'm talking about, and even once you get to know everybody, is like going to a family reunion once a year. You get together with other like-minded individuals who all love the music so much. I'm not trying to say that classical music attendees don't love classical music, but the performers themselves are not competitive in this little sub-world.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two is, it's given me such a freedom to not only explore different repertoire, but to explore different ways of playing by listening to the other players. Not everybody's on the same technical level, but there are so many different interpretive approaches that people bring to the stage at these festivals. I have just been bowled over sometimes, really surprised, and I can give you some examples by, say, Morten Gunnar Larsen from Norway, who is just, and his integrity, Neville Dickey from the UK, who has an incredible left hand. Of course, my good friend Frederick Hodges, who can play any tune in any key, frontwards, backwards, upside down. Virginia Titchener, who can play the drums like a piano player. These people can do so many different things. And all of that has deeply influenced me over the last 11, 12 years since I joined this family. It's changed the way I play the piano.
My guest, Richard Dowling on Wall Street Rag. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. We know each other, and I've been to your lovely apartment, and I see how organized you are with books and music. You're a real historian. And I'm curious, were you that way when you were a little kid? Were you interested in the history of things? Because I know a lot of musicians who aren't that way. The ones I look at that I greatly admire and use, frankly, as resources are people like you, Vince Giordano, Michael Feinstein. You're historians to me and educators in that way, as well as great musicians. So I'm curious when you got into that aspect of it, or were you always into that aspect of it?
The impetus for me was collecting sheet music.
Mm.
And you know, ironic that I would have ended up owning two sheet music stores.
but, had to get rid of that stuff.
Yeah, you didn't see in my apartment, but I have an entire wall full of sheet music that I've collected since I was a little boy. And included in that wall full of collection is that original Scott Joplin Complete Works book with the green maple leaf on the cover.
Oh, I have that too.
I bought that when I was 9 years old at my store. And I've always enjoyed reading books, not just sheet music books. And I guess that's just a curiosity about the world. Mm. I think people that like to read also like to travel. So, you know, growing up as a boy, reading books about everything. You know, I learned about places and thought, oh, wow, I really want to go to France. I really want to go to South America. I really want to go to Africa. You know, I've gotten to see, thanks to the piano, a lot of the world. Like you have played on a lot of cruise ships. That's a great way to get to see a lot of the world, play on cruise ships. So I count myself very fortunate. I think reading and the collecting and the traveling kind of all go hand in hand in a way.
That's interesting.
You know, we both share a love of Vince Giordano, the great musician here in New York City. You want to talk about a collection? Mine looks like nothing compared to Vince Giordano has
well,
a whole
everybody's,
house.
Everybody's looks like nothing. No, he has a second house now.
Yeah, you know? He has a second house just for his collection.
That's funny.
You know, I go very often to Iguana Restaurant right here on West 54th Street to hear Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks. That's been another enormous influence on me in the last, you know, 10 years that I've been in this world. It's hearing that music played authentically is a life-changing experience. Live music, as much as I love my CDs, I love your CDs, I like my friends' recordings, they are just Xerox copies compared to getting to hear you, me, others perform live. That's where the real thrill is. Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks, a favorite group of my guest, pianist Richard Dowling. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. And going to hear Vince Giordano is restorative. I mean, And also, every time someone comes to town to visit me here in New York, and, you know, they're staying over the weekend and through the next week for a convention or something, they, of course, Broadway's closed on Mondays. So they'll call and they'll say, oh, I'm going to be in town. What are you doing Monday? And I say, well, nothing. Well, let's get together and do something. I say, do you trust me? Sure. Okay. Then just say yes. I'm going to take you to a Mexican restaurant and we're going to listen to a jazz band.
And have a margarita.
There's stone silence on the other end of the phone. And you can hear the person saying, I'm not really sure if I want to do that. And I say, you just
wait. You'll
want
to do it.
When we leave the premises, you're going to look at me and you're going to say, that is one of the best things I've ever done in New York. And every time, 3 hours zooms by and you're floating on the ground when you come out from listening to Vince and the Nighthawks.
Your Scott Joplin project, which you've performed many places, but here in our town in New York City, you did it at Carnegie Hall, and you did it at, was it Weill Recital Hall then? And this beautiful, exquisite space. And you did two shows, or two nights, an afternoon and an evening, sold out, extremely successful, and this marathon Scott Joplin performance. Talk about that. And did people think you were crazy to do this?
Well, I had an ambulance waiting on West 57th to take me to Bellevue Hospital for psychiatric evaluation.
What did your manager think?
You know, my manager has been in the business for a long time, Tom Parker, Parker Artists, and he has great sense about these things. And he said, you can do it if you want to, but I don't think this is going to fly. Okay, now, 100 Joplin concerts later, a few months ago, he told me, you know, this Joplin thing wasn't such a bad idea after all.
Oh, boy, if we all talked about the times that people said, I hate that idea, and then we do it anyway. So you a just, good manager knows when to go along as
right,
well.
Correct.
So talk about that, how the people reacted. And also, I'm curious, how did you have variety in an evening like
right,
that? There's a lot of variety in Joplin's compositions, but still, it's all Joplin. It's all one thing.
A lot of people have commented about that who attended the two concerts. Mm. And the concerts, I marketed them as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And it truly, truly was. This is the first time and probably the last time that anybody play all of Joplin's works in one sitting. Well, it was two concerts in one day, but all to hear everything. And, you know, as I was putting the three CD set together, we had to make decisions about whether it was going to be in chronological order, alphabetical order, you know, what was the ordering going to be? And as a performer, not as a historian, but as a performer, I knew that you've got to sell the music to the audience. You are an entertainer first. None of this, you know, esoteric, I have to do it, you know, exactly historically correct, whatever. No, you have an audience to entertain. So both for the CDs and for Carnegie, I spent weeks like moving chess pieces around on the board, trying to decide what is going to be the first piece of the first program. What is going to be the last piece of the first half of the first program? What is going to be the opener of the second half of the first program, and so on and so forth.
Well, that's what we do with
and
the regular concert,
exactly,
too.
And then you start filling in the blanks. So then I came to the realization, don't put the entertainer first. You know, make them wait for that, because that's what everybody wants to hear. So that's near the end of the second program. Alternate famous, non-famous pieces. Joplin wrote waltzes, marches, cakewalks, slow pieces, a tango, fast pieces, you know.
What did you open with?
I opened with Paragon Rag, which is an up tune, but
right,
not famous, but on the same model, basically, as, you know, it's a straight down the middle rag, but not famous. But it has sort of a fanfare-like opening.
Mm.
So that's what I settled on. And the ordering really worked. so many people came up to me and have emailed me to say, you know, I was anxious to hear it all, but I thought I would get bored after a while because so many of the pieces are the same. Not at all. The variety, it was so great. The pacing, it was, you know, the slow fat, the way you mixed it up was just perfect. So I really feel like that was one of the best aspects of doing this. The only piece I repeated on both concerts was Maple Leaf, because that was the piece that his wife, Lottie Stokes, refused to have played at his funeral, even though he had asked for it. And so I thought... Because she thought, you know, the interest in ragtime was waning in 1917, and ragtime always had had the stigma of it being low-class music. That's what Joplin had fought against his whole life. He wanted it to be considered high-class music. That's why he gave his pieces titles like Elite Syncopations and Euphonic Sounds. You know, a syncopated novelty doesn't even have the word ragtime in it. So she forbade that from being performed at his funeral. So I thought, you know, he spent his whole life trying to get his music taken seriously. You can't get much more serious than Carnegie Hall, played on a 9-foot Steinway. Let's give him Maple Leaf twice.
Richard Dowling playing Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Thank you. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons. Additional support is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. For a schedule of upcoming programs, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can listen to Jazz Inspired on your favorite podcast platform and email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Stride Queen. Although we broadcast on NPR stations, we're an independent production not funded by NPR. Please visit jazzinspired.com to find out how you can chip in and support us. No gift is too small. And please write a review on Apple Podcasts, which is the best way for us to entice others to listen to the show. Thanks for helping us spread the word and celebrate our 22 years on air. My guest today is classical and ragtime pianist Richard Dowling. Richard is a specialist with the music of Scott Joplin and has played sold-out concerts across the country with all Joplin programs. Richard and I discussed how great music, no matter what the style, continues to appeal to audiences young and old. Great music is great music. A great example of that is how swing keeps being popular again. People go, oh, there's a renaissance. Well, I've been through five of these. Where people just, you know, the Gap commercial has swing music, so it gets popular for a minute. Then there, and people who are in their 20s now think that's new. But I refuse to be negative about it. I think the great music, it's all about going and hearing live music. I love that you had said going to hear Vince Giordano was restorative. I love that phrase because that's something that I think live music does. You're there and other things happen. You see other people enjoying it. The vibrations come to you. Maybe you dance. All of that, it is restorative. That's a beautiful way to put it. And another music that you and I both love is called novelty music. And people seldom talk about it because I don't think they know a lot about it. They might if they took piano lessons and they played Dizzy Fingers or Kitten on the Keys. But you surprised me with a gift that has some novelty music on it. I have to tell you, there was a time in my life, a little personal aside, that I played so much Zez Confrey that a wonderful pianist named Andrew Fielding, who I haven't seen in years, wrote a tune for me called Zez Who, because I wrote
Because I
played so much Zez Confrey. So he wrote it and had all of those devices in it. It was very funny. I have to dig that out for us.
Please.
So talk about this because you have some Zez on this wonderful CD. Thank you for my present.
You're welcome.
I love it. Talk about this.
Oh, well, Humorestless is a take on Antonin Dvorak's Humoresque. That's a piano piece that was extremely popular. It's still popular, but very popular 100 years ago, turn of the century. And lots of these ragtime, novelty ragtime pianists from the 20s, as music is starting to evolve into jazz, would take classical tunes and rag them. And so this is a player piano role that Zez Confrey recorded with himself. And it's got all kinds of little tongue-in-cheek references. It's got what we call player piano breaks. Those break is where there's a break in the tune and you fill in with these little tumbling passages that sound good and very kind of tinkly. And so I fell in love with this piece. He never published this arrangement. He just sat down at the Player Piano Company and improvised it, I'm sure, and did several takes. So I borrowed the role from a friend. I got a player piano, and I put it on slowly, watched the keys go down, and I wrote it out by hand, and then I learned how to play it.
You did it the old-fashioned way.
I love it.
That's fantastic.
And it is hilarious. It's just great to watch.
Thank you. My guest, Richard Dowling, on Zez Confrey's composition, Humor Restless. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. You brought me some George Gershwin. I love piano rolls, and I haven't played them often on the show. So talk about this particular one, I Was So Young, You Were So Beautiful. Such a great title.
It's one of George Gershwin's very first songs. Not a piano piece, it's a song. In fact, it was 1919, so it just turned 100 years old. He had just gotten a job working for T.B. Harms, a music publisher here in New York. So he's no longer a song plugger. Now he's a staff composer, age 20. He's made the big time here in the Big Apple. And this is one of his very first songs. It's, even though there's ragtime syncopation in it, it's a ballad. And that's the thing that I really find fascinating within this genre of music is the expressiveness in it. When you listen to this song, it's so beautiful. How can a 20-year-old have such mature feelings? It doesn't mean that teenagers and young adults can't have deep feelings, but they don't usually know how to express them in a mature way. And you hear already at age 20, a fully formed artist when you listen to this song.
I'm so glad you brought Jelly Roll Morton, one of my favorites, because one of my favorite recordings of Maple Leaf Rag is his, speaking of ragtime and doing something different with it. But you brought me something else. Talk about this.
The Naked Dance, or as we would say, I grew up in Texas, the Naked Dance. This is his 1939 recording, a solo piano, and written for a pair of women to dance
too. Oh, interesting.
I think they were a couple. These two women. I don't know all the gory details, and this is a family friendly channel here.
NPR.
But this music, I think, embodies Jelly Roll Morton. It's propulsive. It's got that happiness we've been talking about in it. If you can sit still listening to this, there's something wrong with you. This music is made for dancing. It's designed to excite you.
Thank you. You know, you were talking earlier, we both did, about Ragtime being happy, and something just came to me as you were talking about Jelly Roll Morton too, that jazz, my favorite jazz, Ragtime, this music that was invented in America, it has a life force. I think that's what's so strong and appealing, because a lot of it is sad, but there is underneath it this life force of, but I am going to go on. It's never defeated, and that's what's so exciting to me. There's this combination, and certainly with the best jazz, if people think about, I know you're a big Billie Holiday fan, that she had a terrible life, and there's sadness throughout her music. And one of the things I love about her up-tempo things is there's still that tug of the sadness she's experienced. But there's always this, you know, by God, as someone said to me, it was wonderful once, they said, but yes, if they throw themselves over the bridge into the river, they do it with panache. And there is that life force behind it. And as you were speaking, I think that is one of the great things in this music, that it's there.
Thank you.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired.
I guess the first time I heard Ragtime live would have been on the player piano at Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor in the Galleria in Houston.
I remember Farrell's.
There's only one or two of them left in the country.
I didn't know they were left.
We had one on the ground floor next to the ice skating rink in the Galleria. It's the big shopping center in Houston. And I used to beg my parents to take me there. They had a player piano, and I would watch the keys go up and down. I was just fascinated by it. And my parents often went to Shakey's Pizza, and I don't know who it was playing, but there was a pianist there playing in a bowler hat and a garter on his arm with a striped shirt. And, you know, I would get up and play Hello, My Baby. You know, my parents would ask him and probably slip him a $5 bill or something. And so I'd get up and, you know, I'm sure the guy was very, you know, like, okay, sure, whatever. I'll go have a beer while your kid plays the piano. We also went to Old San Francisco Steakhouse, and they had a girl in a period costume on a swing.
On a swing.
And she would go so high, and she would hit a cowbell up on the ceiling with her feet. It was so much fun, and they had a piano, and I'd go up there and play there, too.
And was she singing or just swinging to
just
hit
swinging,
the cowbell?
Just swinging.
Just to hit the cowbell.
Yep, exactly.
But Sounds like an interesting gig.
Those places, you know, have come and gone. My parents took me to Disneyland when I was a little boy. I remember the pianist. I don't remember what his name was.
Had to be Rod Miller, probably.
Probably. And we'd stand there in Main Street, and I was just fascinated. Because again, it's live music. Live music draws you in. We're so surrounded today by music blaring at us from every direction. But when you have to sit and focus on something, also watching a musician play is fascinating to people.
I find
it fascinating, and I'm a musician.
Oh no, I like to get
a good seat to be able to watch the hands. That's my, you know, my guilty thing. No, I want to sit on the left side and watch the hands.
Well, one of the great things about this style is that it is so much fun to watch, because a lot of classical music is it's all fun to watch, but there's so much activity with ragtime. So your left hand is bouncing back and forth. There's a lot going on. What is the majority of your concertizing these days? Classical or ragtime, both mixed up equal?
It's both. I mean, things come and go. Mm-hmm. I'm still basically a classical pianist.
Right.
But I'm having my, you know, more than 10-year love affair with ragtime and early jazz. And I'm, you know, the horizon's endless when you're a piano player.
Right.
I mean, we have the biggest repertoire of any instrument, except maybe the symphony orchestra. But composers have written more for the piano than any other solo instrument.
Right.
And so, you know, you need several lifetimes to get to everything. I've been playing In a Mist by Bix Beiderbecke. It's one of my very favorite pieces and, you know, quote, discovered recently in learning more about him that he wrote a handful of other tunes that he couldn't actually read and write music, but he had his friend Bill Chalice, who come full circle, is a mentor to Vince Giordano.
Right.
And so my goal in this next year is to learn those other four pieces by Bix Beiderbecke.
Oh, fantastic.
And play those on my classical concerts as, you know, the equivalent of a ragtime sonata. But it's not ragtime. This is early jazz. More like a Baroque suite.
Exactly.
With several movements.
Gorgeous.
And to show this is another great American composer here.
One of the great appeals for me, you not only in your presentations is not only just your presentation is so entertaining, but that, as odd as this sounds, you treat all of this as music that's alive, not as set pieces that are historic relics to just be set up and admired. You play them, you bring them alive. And I think that's the difference, which is why your concerts are full, why people want to hear it. The music is fabulous, but you're bringing your interpretation to it, which is really beautiful. And I think for amateurs, they can get excited about playing this music because they see that it is very contemporary. They can bring the feelings that they're feeling now to this music and make it new again, which is really fabulous.
The fact that I get to play very often on a 9-foot Steinway, these piano players from 100 years ago didn't have pianos this good. They had piano-shaped objects.
Right.
So when you've got a piano that good, it's like having a race car. Let's see what this car can do.
Let's take this for a ride.
Right. And let's make this music sound as good as it can sound. That's my goal.
And you accomplish it, my dear. Thank you so much for doing this. This is great on this chilly day in New York.
Love being with you, Judy, as always.
You've been listening to my conversation with pianist Richard Dowling. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another celebrated creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineer is Curtis Heidolf. You can listen to Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired on all podcast platforms and at jazzinspired.com. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Flory on guitar. Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is sponsored in part with generous support from our listeners and Paige at 63 Main in Sag Harbor, New York, serving organic microgreens and vegetables grown on their own energy-efficient indoor and outdoor aquaponic farms. Better taste, happier planet. Visit Paige at 63 Main at opentable.com. And please tell your friends about Jazz Inspired and help us spread the word. For more information, visit jazzinspired.com or judycarmichael.com.